Mr. Chair.
Representative Byer.
I move the dash 83 amendments into Senate Bill 728.
Representative Byer moves the dash 83 amendments to Senate Bill 728. You want to explain what they do?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 728-83 amendments are at your place today. They resolve conflicts with Senate Bill 460, which is already passed. It eliminates Section 2 of 728A, which is not necessary to amend given the sunset during Senate Bill 460.
Any questions? Any comments on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 728 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
We have a motion on the floor to move Senate Bill 728 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Any further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, forward.
I would love to carry the bill.
Senator Byer will carry the bill. We will next proceed to Senate Bill 1089.
Mr. Chair, I think we moved the bat dash 3 amendments yesterday, is that correct?
Let me open the work session on Senate Bill 1089.
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I think the latest amendments are not here yet. Hello? Yeah. I think
they are
not ready.
We've
moved
the amendments coming
1589.
Not go there?
Yeah.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 1089.
Oh, wait, well, 1089, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of a different bill. 1089 was already.
Can we go back to him?
I'm sorry. We have about a zillion bills juggling around right now.
We don't give up that.
All right.
Which one?
Well, again, I'll the work session of Senate Bill 1089.
Oh, shit. Mr. Chair, who has B3 amendments in the Senate Bill 1089?
President Byron is, B3 amendments to Senate Bill 1089. Somebody want to tell us what the B3 amendments?
Yes, we went through that issue, Mr. Chairman, but just very briefly. It restores the fees to what the current law is. It also provides DEQ with two sets of enforcement activities. They can levy a fine for failure to post a certain certificate, $200. And $5,000 for failure to pay the fees, and what fees are in current law can now be paid quarterly rather than once a year. That's what the bill does.
Right. Okay. There's some questions, I guess, relating to this bill regarding the billing and the relicensing, and when does DEQ issue those licenses? When do they have authority to come and check to see if the license is posted? I'm not sure if anyone here can talk about that process.
Mr. Chairman, that line of questioning has not come up before in the House, and there's nothing in my notes from the Senate that would indicate that, but if you give me a minute, I'll see if I can find something.
I guess the question is if licensing takes place and the license is issued in December, it gets put in the mail, it gets to somebody's business until January 15th, and somebody shows up on January 2nd to inspect, are we in a problem there?
The payment of fees, the fees imposed by this section in any calendar quarter shall be due and payable on the 20th day of the month following the end of the calendar quarter.
That include the licensing fees, annual licensing fees.
Yes.
Person doesn't have a 60B license because you get on the premises through no fault of his own, and the holdup is on the part of the DEQ that my intent to know that no fine is authorized or incurred. That's a fine.
So noted for the record. Yeah. I would say. Okay. Very good. We have a motion on the floor to adopt the B3 amendment to Senate Bill 1089. Any further discussion? Any questions, comments? Any opposition? Motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1089 as amended to the floor as a due pass recommendation.
Representative Breyer moves the bill as a floor as a due pass recommendation. Any comments? Further questions?
Mr. Chair. I'd add for the record that the annual fee, the license fee, is a calendar year fee. It would be
in December.
In December, and then it have 20 days following the 1st of January, and the fee would be due.
Okay.
$465.517 is the annual fee, and the where was the one about annual fee? $465.527 is the payment of the fees and the schedule of payment fees.
Any further discussion? Okay. Clerk, please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Motion passes.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Lundquist had it once. I had it once. Anybody else want it?
Representative Breyer, I'm ready to go. Representative Breyer,
I guess I'll share it with you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner said, just good luck with those.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Representative Gardner, you want to carry this one?
I'm fine. I'll carry it.
President Gardner.
Yes, turn around.
You guys are all perfect.
You have one other piece. We have some new amendments to SCR 15, and open a work session on SCR 15 and call Mr. Phelps.
Chairman, my name is Ray Phelps. I'm here with Mary Bachman from AskMaine, and I'm also representing Oregonians who maintain community standards at IBEW Local 48. You have before you Amendment A-7, and that's what I'm supposed to speak to.
Yes, go ahead. Please.
Okay, let me give you. It has been my desire and the desire of an awful lot of people to try to convince people who circulate initiative petitions that they ought to move about Oregon and get out and talk to all of the people of Oregon about their issues.
it could and should result in improving the issue, but in any case, it continues to create an awareness of the issue of formal government. What we propose is a variation of what the voters looked at a couple of years ago, and that is to have the opportunity for people in maybe the more undesirable locations of the state that is less populated for initiative.
More desirable places of the state but less populated. I think that goes hand in hand. Mr. Phil.
That may rise.
Chair, he's not representing us anymore now.
That probably rises to the equivalent of a statement made many years ago about the middle of some place. But anyway, the idea was for initiative circulator, they need to have large population. I'm digging a hole here. I'm going to move out of here. But in any event, we had an opportunity to vote on a major to have an equal distribution among five congressional districts for people who want to put a major on the ballot. So you had to get 20% of each one, and that was rejected by the voters. What we've come back with is a different idea. It still has the geographic opportunity, and that is there are 36 counties in Oregon. And what we're proposing is that a person who wishes to gain ballot status through the initiative process, either statutory or constitutional, would be required to obtain a certain percentage, in this case 3%, of the signatures of qualified voters who live in the particular county. Now, the signature base, as you know, is the votes last cast for governor. And a statutory measure requires 6%, and a constitutional measure currently requires 8%. And I've given you those numbers at the bottom of the page. There were 1,113,000 plus votes for governor at the last election. 6% of that number for a statutory measure would be 66,786, constitutionally 89,048. 3% of the signatures for governor, however, would only be 33,393. So that you could say that I need to get 33,000, and that consists of 3% of all 36 counties. But you only need to get the signatures in 18 of those 36 counties. And then you can get the rest of them anywhere you want. For example, if I were doing this, I would go out and I could take and do 18 counties and accomplish 2,952 signatures. I would go to Gillen County, where I only need 24 signatures. I would go to Sherman County, where I only need 26. Mm-hmm. And you notice those double and triple digit low numbers. You can actually achieve 18 counties and not even hit 3,000 signatures, and then you can go on and do whatever you want to get to the full number of 66,000 or the other number of 89,000. What this does, it does two things. First of all, it moves people out into the better parts of Oregon to discuss the measures that are going to possibly be before them. The second aspect of this is, for a petitioner, there's an incentive to do this. Rather than my having to go as one of my 18 counties, is go to Multnomah County and get 6,350, I can go to Sherman County and get 25 and achieve the same purpose. So there's an incentive for the circulator to go off and try to obtain those number of signatures and then concentrate their efforts wherever they wish to achieve the full number of 66 or 89. That's the idea. So the incentive is to move the discussion, and the incentive is to make that not difficult to achieve, hence the low number. And it gets into the part of the state that oftentimes those folks don't have the opportunity to get into those political discussions. That's the concept. And Mary, you may have
a... Mr. Chair, Mary Baxton with AFSCME Council 75, for the record. We think this is a good idea. We are one of those groups who actually have conversations with people in rural Oregon. We have members who live in nearly every city in Oregon, and, you know, especially you, Mr. Chair, know how cranky they get over there in the better parts of Oregon. When Multnomah County and the Valley control the politics of Oregon. And, you know, we've always kind of joked about the urban-rural split. It is not a joke anymore. And, you know, I've been here forever, so it's like, I just think it's important that we take the political discussion to them and give them an opportunity to have a chance to input into that discussion.
This is Devlin. Do you agree with the chair that the higher populated areas are the undesirable areas?
You just made that.
I need the chair's vote to do that. Actually, no, you know what? Now I have to tell you, I am at heart a city girl. I love the city. But you know what? I think that there are a few places in Oregon that are more beautiful than the far eastern regions of our state. And, you know, I think it's real important that we visit those periodically and that those folks come over and visit us. But, you know, if somebody's got to live over there and, you know, Mr. Chair, somebody has to do this. And, you know, somebody has to live in the city. So, you know, it takes two different kinds of people to make up the Oregon, and we just need to be sensitive to each other's needs, and I understand your need for space, and I don't like quite so much of it, so I'll stay on my side, you stay on your side, we'll just visit back and forth.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you. I'm still wrestling with how this actually works.
Okay.
Greg, you said, I mean, basically, you're going to come out here, you're saying, statutory constitutional equivalent amount, 3%. And then I was reading the language. It says, of the total number of signatures of qualified voters required under this paragraph, the petition shall contain a number of signatures of qualified voters from each of at least 18 counties. So you only need to get 18 counties of 3%. So it's some number less than this, is that right? Because this is a grand total.
That's the grand total of 33, but I did, because when you sit there and you go, I'm sorry, did I interrupt your question?
No, that's...
When you sit there and you go through and you take 3%, that's half. This actually, and I was surprised at myself, it actually came out on the first cut. You will achieve a 33,393. But to get 18 counties, you don't have to get 33,000 signatures.
Right. No, you could take the low ball here. You could actually probably do it with, I don't know.
Well, you,
I'm not going to do the math above you, but it's something considerably less.
Yeah, I figured it out. You can do it with what's the minimum? 952.
What's 952?
2952.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, one of the goals here is not, and I want to be real clear about this, it is not to stop people from getting their initiatives qualified. It is to broaden the base of the counties and the citizens that are involved in the discussion.
Right. The question is, why 3%? And then secondly, how do you view this differently in scope of what the voters decided on the last measure? I mean, why has this got any more of a chance than the...
Well, a couple of reasons, I think. Number one, we came to 3% because it's half of the statutory requirement. The objective was not to make this onerous or difficult. The objective was to reach out. The second thing is I believe that the voters will take a better look, or a more favorable look at this for two reasons. Number one, it's an honest attempt to move people out without burdensome requirement. And the second thing is to engage that conversation, and the other part of it is the number isn't that high. I mean, 24 is not a high number. But at the same time, it causes an interaction among our audience.
Two things. One is, of course, if you can go down as low as almost just a little above 3,000, that number is considerably less than 3%.
Yes, sir, it is.
And secondly, and again, we just passed out, we'll see if it passes, the signature increase, and this obviously would interplay with that. I guess I'm struggling with this. I understand why you're doing it. I'm not sure and told them that this is,
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Edward, the point was, is I wasn't connecting to anything.
Yes.
Other than on the level plane of 6.3. And I didn't try to make 8 go to 4. In other words, I said, let's not confuse anybody. It must have a number that's meaningful so it isn't something frivolous and at the same time something that's really achievable. And the objective here is to get 3% of the signatures in 18 counties so that you have reached out. It's not the idea is to make you move out of the other half. It's not an effort to make you or force you to achieve a very significant signature plateau as you did on the 5 congressional district measure. All or nothing is basically what that was all about. This is not an all or nothing proposition. And so consequently, the 5% or the 20% of the required number of signatures in each congressional district is quite a number of signatures.
Right.
Here, I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in is having a material number of signatures that makes the effort meaningful and at the same time don't make it punitive in as much as you can go out and get your 3,000 signatures in 18 counties, you're on your way. And these are the counties that generally don't get the attention in the initiative process.
And I just follow up, Mr. Chairman. The 3,000, again, I'm just saying, one of the criticisms of 3,000 certainly doesn't represent, even at the 33, if that's quote unquote, as you just said, representing just other areas. I mean, all the strength is requiring somebody to go to a mall or go find some place there's gathering and find these smaller populated counties. You just gather some signatures. I mean, you can get 3 in Gilliam. I mean, it's like pulling a gas station and asking people to sign up.
Oh, you need 24. But,
I'm sorry, I got this. I looked at the wrong call.
Yeah,
that's somebody getting 3 votes. Yeah. Okay, 24.
But never, your point's well made, but the fact of the matter is someone went to Gilliam County. But here, in my mind, and I don't want to mislead by saying, well, you can get there with 29 or just 2, because the reality of it is, it isn't going to happen. What more likely will occur is you'll probably get a mix of the higher populated counties, because remember, you start to get the 66 or 89. So you're probably going to get a mixture of the tri-counties, maybe Wayne County, but you are going to have to get beyond the valley. You're either going to get to the coast, you're going to have to get down to southern Oregon, and you're going to have to get to central Oregon, minimally. So you can work this combination any way you like. All I was trying to show was that this is not a punitive effort. It's only 2,900. To get to the total, you probably would work your way into the tri-county area of Lane County, Deschutes County, but then you're going to have to move. You can't get it done in the valley. You can't get to 18 in the valley. That's the whole idea.
Okay, Mr. Phelps, how do other states who have a similar process as this?
Well, Idaho has this process where they actually require in half their counties, they have 42 counties, or 44, excuse me, they require that you achieve the minimum number of signatures required in 22 of 44, and they have the same 6 and 8 as we do. And I looked at that, and I looked at the 6%, and in some parts of the, in some counties, 6% is a tough number, because obviously, fewer number of people, the more spread out they are, that's a tough number. So I went to 3, merely for the purposes of making an achievable number. It's not too difficult to get there. Missouri, a state that I'm very familiar with, I was born and raised there, and then I got smart and came west. But anyway, there, they have a requirement that you have to have signatures from 7 of the 10 congressional districts. So those are 2 that I know personally, and I will be willing to bet for others. There's only 25 states that have the initiative in the first place.
Right.
Are there any discussion of the, would there be any constitutional challenges, do you think, to this kind of idea?
Well, your legislative council person, Ted Ruttmeyer, has in fact raised that issue, and he equates it to the one person, one vote. I don't agree with him. I think this is a ballot access issue. I
mean, has this been challenged in other states that you're aware of?
Missouri's had that for 25 years, because I was living there, and I know that for a fact. At least I'm not aware of any challenge. But to me, it's a ballot access issue, and that is it's a fairness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fair test. That's one of the other reasons I didn't want to vote at 6%. This is not unreasonable. You also have examples in state statutes right now where you have percentage requirements for candidates for partisan office who want to file by petition.
So Oregon now has this kind of an arrangement, a different issue, and that's why I make the equation to the connection to Gallaudet.
Representative Edwards. Greg, does this have to be in the Constitution?
I think so. I talked that out with Ted Rutlinger, and if you look at the way, it's just on page one of the amendments, and you look at the number of votes cast for governor at the election, what it comes to mind is in the Constitution, you have a universal opportunity. Ted said if you had it in the statutes, even though the Constitution was calling out for a broader base of opportunity, he believed that we would be in conflict, and I happen to agree with him on that, because you would be modifying how you achieve the ballot status when the Constitution says to do it this way, and the statute would say, yeah, but. So I think he's probably right.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion?
I see that this is set for voting in the general election in the year 2000, and my recollection is HDR 21 or whichever the number was, we were talking about changing the percentage of voters in terms of the number of signatures you need to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot. It's set for the primary election of the year 2000, is that right?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. I don't remember.
Has anyone followed up on the notion that if this is on the ballot and contains the old percentage language in it, in addition to the new language, that somehow it might create an inconsistency that as to whether or not this is a later passed amendment with the old percentages in it?
Well, in this case, I'd welcome this amendment. Mr. Chair, Representative Maddox, I would maybe come back a different way with you, and I don't know if I'm right, but we're not changing the number, the base number.
Oh, I know you're not,
but we're only making of that number a constant 3%, so whether the other would pass at 12,
I'm just saying there's this little quirky thing that the whole piece is in is in front of the voters, and all of the bold faces would change. Someone could argue, some smart aleck lawyers could argue, that they've readopted the old percentages because that was what was in front of them. I think they would ultimately lose, but I think that you probably should consider some sort of a notwithstanding that this is not intended to change whatever percentage exists at the time based on any other initiatives that may have been voted on. Or why not put this on the ballot at the same time as the other one and make it clear that it's not intended to be inconsistent? I don't know why I'm helping you, because I don't like this bill.
Just in your nature.
Representative Manning, you do want to be inclusive of all parts of the state, somewhere.
Well, if we had some provision that allowed for internet distribution of petitions, I'd be much more satisfied. Mm. Actually, we could at least amend this to allow the circulation of petitions through the internet.
Electronic signatures and validation.
Just a petition form. Mm. Right now, you can't use the internet even to send out the petition form because it's got to be on the paper and in the printed form approved by the Secretary of State. Which has requirements for everything except for perhaps the manufacturer's brand name for the ink that you use.
Shouldn't we say that the Secretary of State has to post them on his website and they can be downloaded off of the Secretary of State's website?
Sure.
I like it as more and more.
Then I feel more comfortable with the folks in Gillingham County having access to this petition so they can get their 24 people at the local grain. This would be, if we want access to populism, this is a great way. Pardon me, Mr. Chairman?
The postal system also works, and that's currently in place. And if you could just mail a few petitions out there. Well,
I like to
hear the discussion.
Pardon me?
Further discussion on the amendment?
That's in front of us? No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Is there a motion pending?
No, there's not a motion pending. And we have suggestions for other amendments.
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion that we send SJR 15 unamended to the floor with a decal.
What's up, Bill Gray?
One question.
What's with the real, actual Bill Gray?
Mr. Chair, I know there's been a lot of interest in this committee on annual sessions, I hate to see a good bill get ruined in this committee. Quite frankly, I don't know if you would see this thing passed with that on there. I just think we should have a chance to vote on annual sessions.
I appreciate that very much, Mr. Edwards, and it was not my intention to move this bill today. Might discuss the further amendments, and I needed a vehicle to get this up for discussion in front of the committee. It had been drafted for this, so that was my intention.
Is there another vehicle for you, Mr.
Chair? There is an HCR. Yes. There also are HCRs that do a annual session.
If you want to use it for something else, Mr. Chair, I'm glad to give you a motion. I've got some amendments here.
HCR is on, 21 is on the next primary, so this would be on the same ballot as that.
HCR 21 would be on the this fall.
Terminal Chief?
No.
Initiative, the one we bumped the amounts up.
Yeah, I think it was on the next general.
Mr. Chairman, if you're going to use potentially another vehicle for that, is there a chance we could get this bill advanced this weekend for a vote up or down on annual sessions in the committee?
I'd be, I'll look into that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I certainly will not kick a hole in the hull by supporting this motion at the present time. I happen to like the annual session still, but I understand the chair's predicament.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your consideration very much. So we can either call the roll on the motion or we can have the motion withdrawn.
Sorry, motion.
You didn't accept the motion, Mr. Chair. I know I didn't accept it.
Oh.
We are in work session. Yes?
Well, you have to accept the motion.
No, I'll just have to vote it down. I can't.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, you do have to accept the motion. You didn't accept the motion. It's not a valid motion.
I was going to throw it all in the branch. I really do want to have a vote on this bill unamended, or at least an annual session bill. I still think we need, because I'm not sure what's going to happen with term limits anyway on the floor. And I think we're getting down to the point of session where we should try this. And I think there's a majority on this committee that would support it. Even you, Mr. Chair.
I'm a great piece of democracy.
So I'm just trying to see if we can have a chance to have a vote on it.
Well, thank you, and we will meet again on Sunday, and hopefully we can clear some things off the calendar at that time.
You think that is okay?
Likely.
Okay. All right, I will draw my motion.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll close the work session. All right, we are 15.
Okay. What are you doing?
I think we'll go now to...
You set the scene clear. Appreciate it. Pardon me.
I don't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Manning.
I move to dash one amendment to HGR 31.
And would you care to explain the dash one amendment to HGR 31?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Dash 1 Amendments to HGR 31 are a complete revision and rejuvenation of this original House Current Resolution, which originally had to do with the elections process, and we still are dealing with the elections process here. The resolution basically lets us revisit an issue which led to an untimely death in the Senate today of H.J.R. 91. This is a very narrow, clean version that I would have liked to have seen in front of the Senate, but unfortunately wasn't in front of the Senate. They had the evil twin of this in front of them. And this is a much more limited version, which is presented in a very positive way. The key part is the line 6 through 9 of the -1 amendments, to get a little more serious here. That this says, in regard to protections against unreasonable searches and seizures, evidence that would be admissible in a criminal case in federal court is admissible in a criminal case involving a victim in state court. It's limited. The version that the House passed of H.J.R. 91 was quite broad, and it had to do with, in effect, saying that the search and seizure provisions of the Oregon Constitution would be interpreted the same as the search and seizure provisions of the federal Constitution. The Senate then trimmed that down to say, well, they'll talk about remedies generally, and came up with some language that was fairly tortured that went to the Senate floor in H.J.R. 91, and that language, in my view, was hard to understand and also suggested that there were times when evidence could be used inappropriately. This is limited to a criminal trial. It still allows an interpretation of the Oregon Constitution that is broader than the federal Constitution in terms of discipline that might be imposed on any officer of the state who violates that, civil liability that might be imposed for violation, protection against the use of evidence, say, in civil cases. But that when you got down to a criminal trial involving a victim, that what is called the exclusionary rule would only be applied to the extent that there is a federal exclusionary rule. So we're down to the question of remedy, not right, and we're down to criminal trial involving a victim rather than the broader concept of rights again. This would allow us to take the position that it's okay for the courts in Oregon to say there's a broader range of protections in Oregon as to search and seizure, but to say, too, that the exclusionary rule would not apply in the limited number of circumstances where we presently would keep out evidence, which is reliable evidence of someone's guilt, in order to try to protect against inappropriate police action. There are other ways that are now available in modern society. I won't give you the whole speech about how the exclusionary rule evolved, but originally it evolved because it was seen by the courts as the only way to prevent inappropriate police action. Nowadays, with civil lawsuits, disciplinary rules, the standards that we've established for law enforcement, there are many ways that we can discipline law enforcement personnel for doing the wrong thing. But we right now, in effect, victimize the victim further by saying, you can't get justice in court because somebody screwed up. With that, I'd say, too, that this is something that the House passed in a broader version. This is a narrower version that allows us to revisit the issue and see if we can give the Senate a chance to look at this fresh, narrow version.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mannix, and I do appreciate the fact that this is more concise than H.R. 91, having been through the hearing in the House Criminal Law Judiciary Committee and participated in that work that came forward. This is a straightforward and clean. Further discussion, colleagues? Do we have a motion before us? And further discussion on the motion. Any objection to the motion? There are none to order.
Chairman.
Dash-1 amendments to move into H.R. 31. Representative Mannix.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move H.R. 31 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Calling for the motion to move H.R. 31 as amended to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Devlin.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate
we'll that discussion before me.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
I believe that this one has some elements of its evil twin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We voted against HBR 91 on the floor. I'll support this motion, but it may change with the support.
Okay, further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I did give a lengthy exposition before, and there was a reason for that, too. I thought it was important to make a record of what we were trying to do, and I thank you for your consideration.
Absolutely. Please call roll.
Mr. Dreyer?
Aye.
Devlin?
Aye.
Edwards?
Nope.
Gardner?
No.
Manny?
Aye.
Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, notice of intent of a possible minority report.
For the record, the notice of intent is a possible minority report, and it closes the work session on HJR 3159 for the carrier, and that closes the. We'll go on now to. Senate Bill 535, and we have it posted for possible consideration on our agenda today. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 535, and Mr. Starr has an amendment and discussion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Sir. Yeah, I think the rules say in the state back and forth, we can put that to be considered a vote by which we pass. Before we can make sure the vote, we need to suspend the rules to do that. Okay, I'll move to
suspend the rules. Okay, let's endeavor to suspend the rules for purposes of considering amendments to Senate Bill 535. Should we call the roll?
Just for clarification, yes, Mr. Chair, the suspension of rules is to bring the bill back into the committee's position?
Correct.
Well, no, so that we can vote for it back.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's correct. So that we can vote for it back in our position. So, any objection to that motion? Okay, the motion carries. The rules are suspended. Representative Beyer, do you move to reconsider the vote that we cast Senate Bill 535?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Today calls a motion for us to reconsider the vote which was passed in Bill 535. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Yes.
You have the bill then before us.
That's against colors again.
And Mr. Starr, you have some amendments for discussion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I had two sets of amendments drafted, A7s and A8s. And I did that with your permission so the committee would know. A7 amendments, as you know, the amendments we adopted in the bill moved the double deduction from $3,000 to $5,000. The A7 amendments, too, is moved from $3,000 to $5,000, and then 2 years later, from $5,000 to $7,500, and then 2 years. And then the -8 amendments include that as two steps, and then a final step, from $7,500 to $10,000. 2 years following. It allows us as a legislature to, I think, take care of an inequity issue when just double taxation, where we are pay taxes on money that we give to the federal government. I think there's an argument to be made that that's not appropriate. And it also allows the legislature time over time to adjust and make those necessary adjustments in the state budget. It doesn't do this all in one fell swoop where we would have a significant revenue reduction in one biennium, but would take bites at the apple after over three budget cycles. After saying all of that, I would appreciate the chair's indulgence in bringing this bill back. I understand, however, that the stars haven't aligned on this amendment.
Right.
No time. As far as adopting them and moving them forward with the powers that be in the building. So I appreciate the indulgence of the chair and the committee in considering these amendments. So at this point, I wouldn't move them into the bill either once.
And we will send these. Order. And Representative Beyer.
Mr. Chair, I move we rescind amendment that the A4 amendment from Senate Bill 535.
Okay. The motion for us called to rescind the A4 amendment to Senate Bill 535. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Chair.
Mr. Byer.
I move Senate Bill 535 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
We have a motion calling to move Senate Bill 535 to the, as in its original form, to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Quick question?
Yes.
Is that motion with no recommendation or with a due pass recommendation?
Well, if it's the original bill.
No, you're back.
Original bill.
That'll be with no recommendation. I'm assuming.
Oh, it'd be better with due pass, Mr. Chair.
I would think so.
All right, I'll
consider that it's with a due pass.
Okay.
Okay. We'll get hung up on that. I think it's fine.
Okay, further discussion on the motion?
Put people up. Mr. Meyer?
Aye. Chairman?
No.
Edward?
Aye.
Greg?
No.
Annie?
Aye.
John?
Aye. Aye. And motion carries, Mr. Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, change my whole time.
There you go, Richard.
No, I'm all right. I'm comfortable with it. Okay, and the Senate Bill 535 goes to the Committee on Ways and Means with a two-pass recommendation. And seeing no other business before the committee, we are adjourned. But before we adjourn, I guess we will be meeting on Sunday at 1 o'clock instead of, no, in the afternoon, not in the morning.
And at
1,
I said,
yeah. I said in the morning. Oh, I'd be happy to do that for some of you. If, I don't think...
maybe a couple of you would be fine to show up then, but I think some of the other people who are participating in the process may not like that.
And I understand I'm trying to... Representative Edwards' bill from Revenue will be posted.
Yes.
And there's a pretty good chance that... It's the Edwards annual session, so
there's some chance that it will.
Yeah.
We're celebrating a process.
It's not been so smooth. We are doing.